We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Miami.
Welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas, and with me today, we have producer and co-founder, Mr. Brian Coyne.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
It is good. It is Monday. It is another week in the NBA calendar. We also welcome in our Saucy Nuggets insider, Lefty Leif.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Mr. Leif and Brian. And also our hot take, Harry. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Ready to go.
And our guest for this evening, Rohan Incardi of Sports Illustrated, one of our favorites and a regular around here. Friend of the show, Rohan. Welcome.
I feel like immediately I need to follow up, like, from my last appearance.
Why?
Which was, I called out Leif pretty hard about something that we couldn't really discuss in exact terms. All I have to say is, he came through. He came through in an incredible way. Just know that he deserves a lot of credit for being a stand-up guy. My all-time favorite people immediately. For what he did, so I just want to shout him out real quick.
This is how Leif gets his sources. Well,
thank you for the kind words, but that's just a testament to Heat Beat culture, baby.
Did Leif come through more than LeBron in Game 3? What a transition! No, but seriously, I do want to mention that we are part of the Five Reasons Podcast Network. You can check out our network affiliates, everything from Ballscast to 3 Yards Per Carry to the flagship Five Reasons Show with Ethan Skolnick and Chris Whittingham, who had Tony Fiorentino on yesterday. So you could check that out right now on the iTunes feed. We're all there. And the new Pitch Invasion, a Chris Whittingham soccer show. So check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yep. And I know the guest list, and it's going to be very, very good. So we're going to play some promos for that later.
Chris's first show for Pitch Invasions this week, actually.
This week, so there we go.
Are you guys playing nice with Smoot now?
We're boys with Adam Smoot. Well, not really. I think he still hates us, but Adam Smoot is the kind of producer part
being
of Ballscast.
Being a professional.
I mean, let me tell you something, and this is like super inside Twitter. So for those of you not on the Twitter sphere, Adam Smoot is a longtime member of Heat Twitter. I guess you can call some of us second generation Heat Twitter, and I have this third, fourth, fifth, whatever, so on and so forth. But like, you know, a lot of us came in like right after LeBron came and like when the Twitter boom happened, and Adam is part of like, you know, the OG Heat Twitter crew, and he doesn't really like us. And we really, really mess with him and torment his life. And now we all joke because Ethan brought us together with the Five Reasons Network. So now Adam still doesn't follow me though, or any of us.
Okay. No, we're all muted still.
We're all muted. And actually, the show account did not follow Heatbeat until today. And he only followed us to because we had 3,305 followers. So I was like, we're 305 till we die. And Adam, who runs that account, the Ballscast account, followed us to make it 306.
I respect that.
I do too. Our eternal rival. So check out our affiliates. And I do want to talk. We'll talk about those games over the weekend, the Cavs game and the Rockets Warriors game. But Kawhi's offered the Supermax. And I think, Harrison, you were saying no one has refused the Supermax yet. Harrison's putting on his headphones. He's so great at this. Harrison, I was saying how in the group chat you said that nobody has refused the Supermax yet. And Kawhi's been offered it. So like we talk about Kawhi like leaving, but like if he leaves, he would leave the Supermax on the table. That historically that'd be the first time that happens. In the short time that the Supermax has been available.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I'm trying to deal with the
dog. There's a damn dog in the back. Like, come on, man. We're part of a network.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying
to figure out. Illustrated guests on, and you're like, you leave, you disappear, you don't have your headphones on, you come back.
I figured
he inspired me to put my headphones on, so.
Thank you. Truthfully, though, about Kawhi.
Leif, save us.
I'll try. So, like, the fact that they're all of a sudden offering this to him right now, sight unseen, he hasn't played a game in quite a while. There's been tension. For it to be reported that they're prepared to make that offer to him, that really feels like, to me, that this is, like, basically on the rocks, and this is, like, their Hail Mary attempt at making it right. Because why else would the timing be conducive to do that now versus waiting until you I don't know. I just feel like it kind of came out of left field, and that's probably because they got indication that he wants to be moved or he was unhappy, and they really felt strongly enough to where they need to now turn around and make it right. And what better way of doing so than paying him as much as you can? So I just thought the timing of it was kind of interesting.
Well, I agree. I think basically what it comes down to is they have to force his hand, right? Because you make this offer now when he has 1 year left on his deal to see if he's going to accept or not. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing what it comes down to. If he accepts, okay, you know he's bought in. I think they're willing to be, you know, look past this last year and say, hey, we have him for 5 years. We can build around him. If he doesn't take it, that's how you know, right? If he's not willing to sign it right now, if he says, no, I want to wait a year, that's when you kind of get the idea, okay, we're going to trade him. Now, there's something to be said about, do they lose a little leverage in that situation? Yes, but I think the biggest thing about offering this contract to him is it forces his hand. Now, there's a chance he signs it and then down the road demands a trade. But I mean, we've seen how the Spurs handled that, you know, with LaMarcus Aldridge, who would have been much easier to move than, you know, they could easily let him go if they wanted to. Let me put it that way. So I think what it comes down to is just kind of forcing Kawhi's hand. And that way they get some clarity on what they want to do moving forward.
I know we've talked about like how that Supermax kind of really cripples teams going forward and trying to build around guys. I kind of think Kawhi may be the last guy on the list that I'd give it to.
That's worth it.
Yeah. That I'm like, after Kawhi, whoever down the list of who you think the best players are, I think right after Kawhi is where I don't do it.
And Kawhi is so good that we're saying that, and he has been injured for an entire year. So that shows you like that he can actually be on the high end of that spectrum. That's just go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. I just want to say how much I hate the Supermax for both parties. Right? It makes sense on some level. You know, okay, you can offer these guys all this money, but here's my issue with it. It's twofold. One, it forces teams like the Wizards, let's say they give John Wall a Supermax. I love John Wall, but that contract in a couple of years, the Russell Westbrook contract, I mean, I joke about it with some colleagues. We're a little too harsh on Russell Westbrook in our group chat, but, you know, could be a terrible, crippling deal for the Thunder 2 years from now if George leaves, you know, Melo, whatever. But if they have Russ and no one else, I mean, and then you look at it from the player side of, let's say you're DeMarcus Cousins, right? And the Kings don't trade you and they offer you a Supermax. Now you have to decide between, you know, an extra $70 million versus, you know, playing for a dysfunctional organization that may never give you a chance of winning. So I really hate the Supermax from both sides. I think players who meet those qualifications should be allowed to make that money in free agency. I understand you want to give small market teams, you know, this ability to keep their guys. The problem is it gives teams like the Kings or the Suns with Devin Booker one day, a free pass to suck for as long as they want. They can sign guys like, you know, I just really don't like it for either side.
Rowan, I need you to admit this one thing for me, because the NBA system is currently broken. You can't tell me that the NBA has parity if the Heat can't be one of the teams that can field the superstar game. It's broken.
I do think.
I don't know if that was a question as much as it was.
Yeah, Brian, what the hell was that? That contribution sucked. That joke wasn't even funny.
I think it was like a hypothetical.
To kind of salvage Brian's really shitty point, I do think it's funny how like the CBA, how it is now, was in large part created to kind of short circuit Miami, and it's really done that. I mean, that and blood clots have really like tied the Heat. And Miami's kind of in a weird situation that the Heat are never the team that has to overspend for free agent X or for superstar X. That's a kind of like Miami's a destination city that you can kind of get a guy with all the tax breaks or whatever, with the promise of organizational stability and, you know, the nice city, that you can get a guy for not a supermax. But like now they're in a position, because they're in like cap hell, they have to kind of like, if they're willing to sign and trade for a supermax guy or something, they have to like, and take a chance on a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, who's coming off an injury.
You can't sign and trade for a supermax guy.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? They have to sign and trade for like enormous contracts and overpaying of players.
I will say real quick, I think what's ironic is I think the last two CBAs were both a little bit of an overreaction to what was happening in the league. I think two CBAs ago, when they had the amnesty clause and all that, that was made, that CBA with like the repeater luxury tax was made with Miami in mind, right? And then I believe they had one more negotiation after that when they renewed. And they put in the Supermax, which I think was a reaction to this Durant scenario, right? Where they were like, how do we let a team like OKC? And what's funny is, I think the same thing kind of happened last time, but it's more drastic this time. The team, it was supposed to curtail, right? Like they made the Supermax, I think, in sense that we want to keep guys in their cities. We don't want a team like Golden State. But what's happened is, it's prevented other super teams, and it's let Golden State just run roughshod over the league. And it's just there's always these unintended consequences, you know, these finger snaps by the NBA, if you will, if I can make an Avengers reference, where they think it's going to fix everything. And then there's always these unintended consequences. I think right now I don't love the health of the league in terms of a competitive standpoint.
Another unintended consequences, the way Riley has to come at this, because you know that there are a number of high talented players, like really elite level players, John Wall being one, you know, Westbrook is a more obvious example. But even if you go to the next tier down, like the Boogie Cousins that may get maxed out, and that's like a question mark around the league, or, you know, if it's like Damian Lillard, who makes a certain amount of money, or DeMar DeRozan. These are guys that can definitely improve the Heat like immediately, but are they good enough to justify the percentage of the cap that they take up? And I've seen and heard a lot about, you know, like you see Riley in press conferences kind of shake his head at the Supermax and the $20 million salaries and things of that nature. And now he's going to be faced with basically the only way to get that top level talent via trade is to take on one of those guys. So like John Wall, like, do you really make that deal when he's going to make $45 million? His talent says you do, if you think that you need to be top heavy that way, but can you really afford to do that in this, you know? So it's just one of those things where I think it probably tugs at Riley more than it does a lot of other GMs and execs.
I definitely agree with Rohan. The Supermax is not great for the league. The key to like getting around it is when you trade the guy, because I don't think you can keep a player all through his contract. Look at kind of what the Clippers did, even though Blake Griffin wasn't a supermax, like signing him to a max deal and then getting him out of there in the first year before that contract could really come back to hurt you is kind of what these teams are going to have to do if Paul George and Carmelo leave the Thunder and Russell Westbrook's the only guy left. They have to start thinking about moving him for whatever they can. If John Wall's the guy in the Wizards that they don't want, you know, that everyone's having an argument with, why are you trading the guys around him to make him happy when the truth is, yeah, Wall's great, he's a superstar, but you could build a decent team around Bradley Beal, who's making a more reasonable salary. And so when you move these guys is important. And if you trade for a supermax, and by the end of the year, or by the end of the contract, you know, maybe you could move them again, even though it's a massive contract. Maybe it'd only be for 2 years, and then you got a giant expiring the last year of the deal. Like, the value of the deal at the time when a move is made is key to getting around it.
I kind of think that the NBA is becoming a bit like the NFL in the sense, in like team construction, in the sense of NFL is really big on getting value guys, right? So, like, let's look at the Patriots. They never really overspend on people as compared to the Dolphins. They have their cap tight end in Ndamukong Suh and Tannehill, and you know, so like, I think the NBA is kind of moving to a place where, like, you don't want to sign, even if they're transcendent talents, you might not want to tie up some $45 million in one guy when you can't fill out the rest of the roster. But on the other hand, you got a team out west and the Warriors and even the Rockets, if we're being honest, like, almost posted a historic offense that have like two top, what, 30 players ever on the team. And it's like, and a bunch of like elite shooters. So it's kind of like, because the teams that are already established are like running roughshod over the league and everybody else is trying to desperately search for value, it makes it incredibly hard. It makes the Warriors' existence so much easier because there's no way for anybody to really build a valid contender.
So two things. I mean, one, I think my ultimate issue with the Supermax is I think the consequences are it's restricting player movement, whether that's through free agency or trades. Players feel like, if I can get a Supermax offer, I should stay. That stops them from moving, but I don't like that aspect of it. And then to Harrison's point, you gotta have to trade them early, or like that value, it may never work out. To Johnny's point about the NFL, what I think is maybe more even similar to the NFL is a team like Philadelphia. Literally, the Sixers and Eagles are in the same spot where their best player, you know, the Eagles, it was their quarterback, you know, for the Sixers, their best players are on rookie deals, right? So it's like, how do you strike while that iron is hot? I think that's going to be a really interesting thing moving forward in the NBA. If you got, you know, if you get someone like, I'm not sold on DeAndre Ayton, but we can talk about that another time. But if you get a number one pick, who, I just don't know why you'd pick a center number one in 2018 unless he's Joel Embiid. But
I agree.
You know, if you have like a player like a Simmons and an Embiid on their rookie deals, you almost have to strike when that iron is hot, because if you don't, then, you know, can, for Boston, for example, is Boston going to be able to keep this team together? I mean, they're in a great spot. They have a lot of options, but it's almost like there's too many doors for Danny Ainge to open. It's like, do I trade this guy? Do I trade Kyrie? Do I trade, you know, they have so many doors. And it's almost like
magic hats.
Yeah. They almost have to do it now, because in a couple years, they're going to be in cap hell, and like, Philly's in that same spot.
Insert a promo right here.
Hello, this is Chris Joseph, co-host of The Ballscast. Some of you might have heard our earlier promos on this podcast and wondered, what in the whole is Ballscast thing all about? Well, Ballscast is a comedy podcast about Miami sports, culture, and politics, and sex, and food. You know, all the shit that matters to those of us who call the 305 home. We also throw in parody songs and comedy sketches and invite the occasional cool-ass guests, and my co-host Slim and I do all of this while completely baked out of our gourds. So, if you love Miami sports, but you're also into laughing and living your fullest life in this beautiful city we call our home, then please download Ballscast wherever you consume your podcasts. Then, sit back, relax, and enjoy the crazy. Now, listen to some fart noises.
So I look at Boston and like I actually love their position because they can actually probably wait out like the teams around them, except for the Sixers, because they have so many. So you could probably move Kyrie or Gordon Hayward for a guy that's on a pretty decent like contract, like a disgruntled guy. Like, you don't, like, the Celtics don't have to be giving out super maxes to anybody, because Tatum's going to be, if like anybody is going to be that guy, it'll be Tatum, and you're not going to have to pay him for a while. And if you have to lose Rozier, you can lose Rozier. That's fine. Like, you're not really... And you can get rid of Rozier and get a pick back very easily. So they can probably, like, reshuffle and be, like, a 1-3 seed for the next couple years until they really have to, like, pay Tatum. Mm-hmm. And they could...
They'll have options.
And Gordon Hayward are super movable, especially the teams like Miami to a team like New York. Like, somebody will take those guys. Easy.
Phoenix will take anyone.
So
hopefully,
like,
hopefully they take Hassan.
I had this conversation with a friend of mine who's a Celtic fan, and I go, do you want Kawhi? And he goes, hell no. I go, why? He goes, because I don't want to pay him that much money, and we have a really good team. And I go, but you don't have a top 15 player. I go, maybe you have a top 15 player, but like, for sure you don't have a top 12 player. How are you going to win? And he's like, nah, you know, A, they're in the East. B, you kind of, in the NBA, you have to kind of bank on luck. And to get Kawhi and to, like, to gut the team of everything that they've done when it's not, it's still not going to be enough. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
I will say this. If they keep one of Tatum or Brown and they trade for Kawhi, I mean, you know, let's compare it to what I think is the best offer right now is Fultz, Saric, and a draft pick.
Hold on, but okay, why is that a better offer than Winslow, Jay Rich, Bam, and a pick? What is so special about Saric and Fultz?
So I think that the Sixers, I mean, it's a lottery pick, right? I think that's number 10. Fultz, I think you're betting on it. Like, Fultz has a higher ceiling than any of those Heat guys that you mentioned. That's what it comes down to.
Or Jay Rich?
Yes. I understand that this was a crazy year, and he may have the yips, and it may be he's a number one pick for a reason. It's a big risk, but he's a consensus number one pick. Consensus number one pick for a reason. Okay, so I agree you're taking a risk, but maybe look at it as we get Fultz. We are bad for a year, and then we get another guy to bring in with him. I do think that's a better offer. Saric would be great on this first.
Saric isn't better than either Jay Rich or Winslow.
But the ceiling's
like not there either. But, like, my thing is that you're trading probably the best perimeter defender that ever lived. Like, what the Spurs have is one of the most generational talents ever, and you're going to really, like, your better offer is a guy that may play another 2 years in the league because what he had was, like, what he did was kind of unprecedented. And, by the way, I don't think enough is talked about this. Fultz played on a team that was no good, and I know he was a consensus number one pick, but dude played for a team that was no good. And in that sport, you usually get a team to the tournament, or you make a team good.
Like, I mean, Ben Simmons either. Well, okay. Well, let's just we can argue.
There are questions
Spurs
there.
Heat offers. Yes.
Like,
we can argue Spurs Heat offers. You know, that's kind of separate from my point right now.
Yeah.
But let's say you're the Celtics, right? And I think if you trade Jalen, you trade Rozier,
and a pick.
And you trade the pick you're getting next year. Okay, let's say the Spurs love that offer because they're getting a known commodity in Rozier, a known commodity in Brown, a guy who I think would be great in San Antonio. And you have Kyrie, Kawhi, Hayward, Tatum, Horford. I think that is easily a finals team in the East. And actually gives you a really good chance against
I don't think it gives you a good chance against Golden State, but I agree with finals in the East. My thing with that deal is so we're going off of a couple months of Rozier as value?
Yes.
Rohan, and I don't know if, maybe I'm being Homer guy. But, like, I don't get how that guy is better or more valuable than a guy like Jay Rich, who's done it for two seasons, or a guy like, and I mean, Justice has had the same, like, the time that that Rozier has played well, Justice has played just as well.
Yeah, not to mention that Jay Rich is also locked up for next 4 years.
Yeah.
Yes, and Jay Rich is on a good deal. I do not disagree. I would love to gas up all the Heat guys
on the Heat offer, and I'm like, I think that's really fucking good. Like people are like, no, there's no chance, and I was like, I don't know. I'm not plugged into front offices, but I look at what the other people offer, and I'm like, okay, yeah, obviously, you know, Jaylen Brown is clearly better than what Miami has and that Boston pick, but is it so much better that, oh no, Miami has no chance that, and I'm like, I'm not
here's,
sure.
Here's one thing I'll say is when you're making a trade like this also, I think it can be an easier sell internally and externally for if you're trading someone like Kawhi, to trade for potential as opposed to known commodities. Now, Justice and Bam can still grow a lot, right? But I think you have a good idea of what Jay Rich is. You have a good idea of what Justice is. I think Jaylen Brown, again, has a higher ceiling than all those guys. I really do. I mean, he's already...
I agree.
He's playing... So you have that, and then you have the factor of a pick, you have a factor of Rozier, where you're almost selling it as we can get these guys and grow them in our system as opposed to... You get a Jay Rich, a Justice, and a Bam, and it's like, you know what these guys are. They make your team all right, but it almost gets you like the role players you'd need around Kawhi as opposed to guys you want to trade Kawhi for. Because I think when you make a trade like this, you're really trading for the future.
But
if that makes sense,
why do
and we, I'm not saying it's the smartest Rohan, way, but I think it's usually considered what happens.
But like, why do we know? So you're saying we kind of know what Jay Rich is, and you're kind of saying we don't know what Rozier is. I mean, Rozier is also 24 years old. So I mean, if we want to do that, like, I mean, Jay Rich should, by all accounts, by all the basketball people I've talked to, should be all-team second defense. And it's not just Heat guys. I'm like, the national people that I've talked to said Jay Rich should be, if you're watching, he should. He's one of the best perimeter defenders in the sport. He is a very, very good shooter. He's gotten better every single year. So, yeah, I think we kind of have an understanding he's going to be a 3-and-D guy who could probably put the ball on the floor and finish, right? But, like, to say that we know what Jay Rich is, but we don't know what Rozier is, when Rozier has been a literal punchline, not just for Miami, but for the entire league for the past 2 years. So,
well,
and I guess that's where my objection to that is.
Can we just acknowledge that this entire conversation is moot because we don't necessarily even know all the specifics of if Kawhi is being offered around the league and if Boston is interested in. I mean, Boston has showed before that they'd want to keep their team together. They got Hayward and Kyrie coming back. You know, the whole Philly offer thing
that they wait for, like this, like the opportunity, like what
everything possibly, but maybe they're holding out for Anthony. Maybe they're holding out for Anthony Davis. I just think that there's too many variables to necessarily start comparing deals necessarily. But I do agree that like the moxie that comes with saying I traded my franchise player for the number one pick last year or something like that is the kind of thing that you want in the headlines more than just, you know, frankly, like Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow. Like, it just doesn't give you that same sex appeal. And I know that that sounds
Spurs,
ridiculous.
But hold on, we're talking about the Spurs.
But maybe the Spurs think differently.
We're not talking
so
about the Knicks. Like, if we're
no,
talking about the
true.
Knicks, like, I'm
that's
with
true.
You. But, like, that's not an organization. And, I mean, like, that's an organization that probably respects what Miami does a lot. And Miami has believed in Jay Rich and Justice, like, defiantly. Like,
I just think the overarching theme is that we're likely to be outbid for most top players because of our draft pick situation and the fact that, you know, we are locked into some contracts and things of that nature. And a lot of the guys that we would have to give away are the guys we'd want to keep. And, you know, the pick situation is obviously an issue. So that's why I think almost like the Kawhi conversation almost is a little pie in the sky at this point. And it's more, for me, it's more looking around the league at like, do you want to take a chance on DeMar DeRozan or Chris Middleton or Drummond? You know, I saw him hitting threes all of a sudden, Kemba or Dame or Andrew Wiggins, you know, like
the guy
if they
I love
can't
is Beal, man. I really like Bradley Beal.
Boogie, Jabari Parker. Like,
dude,
I think those are
build
the names like, when we're thinking about the tiers of players that the Heat can target, I think that those are the names we should be thinking about rather than the Kawhis at this stage.
But when you do that, like my thing is, sorry, Harrison, let's give you in a second. But like what we talked about earlier, like you need to find value. He's making faces. You need to find value. So like they're going to have to overpay for one of those other guys. And we know that overpaying for DeMar DeRozan, for Boogie Cousins, for Bradley Beal, for Chris Middleton, like that's not going to win you anything. And like we've, you know, we at the end of the day, like, we're not out here to be the Hawks or the Raptors.
What about Wiggins, though? You don't think he could realize
okay,
his potential?
Now, that's different. But that we're going back to what Rohan was saying, this kind of potential versus known commodity. We know what DeRozan, what Bradley Beal, Boogie Cousins is. Like, Wiggins is something, you know, else. So those kinds of deals I would be happier with Miami doing than something like overpaying for Boogie Cousins and, like, overspending for DeMar DeRozan or, like, throwing everything you have to get Bradley Beal. Harrison, go.
I think something that like we touched on at the very beginning of the pod but kind of have glazed over is that, yeah, the Spurs might be offering the Supermax to Kawhi as a Hail Mary to try to bring him back. If he happens to sign it and he's healthy, that he has much more value on that contract. So if the Spurs come out, and not that they're going to admit that they're ready to trade Kawhi, but if they say, hey, we're open for business – on this one-year deal where the guy has just been unhappy in San Antonio, where, like, no one is ever unhappy. I mean, you had the little thing with LaMarcus Aldridge last year, but then he ended up signing a 3-year contract extension. Like, no one really leaves the Spurs on bad terms. So I have to say that teams are got to be a little nervous. They're not sure about the injury. He's been really distant from the team. He's got you got 1 year to prove to Kawhi that that's where he wants to re-sign. And all of those things mean that the offers might not be as big as we think they're going to be. So, yeah, the Sixers might – I mean, for me, that's – if the Sixers offered that, I mean, it's not the best deal, but if that's what San Antonio wants, I could see them take the Sixers would be ecstatic, even, you know, to get that deal. Or if Boston can dangle a couple of their guys, yeah, those make sense. But the thing is that in that one season, you either need to like you need to win, or you need to show Kawhi that this is the best chance to win. And all of those things make it very complicated. So if the Spurs say, hey, Kawhi's available, I don't think you're getting the best offers. And if the Heat are willing to throw everything at them, it might be something that they take if Kawhi does not want to go back to the Spurs.
Two things real quick. One, and to Harry's point about you got to win with Kawhi, I think any East team that would trade for him would make the finals. And this is based, I think, on LeBron probably going West. I have no idea. That trades for him, the ones we're talking about, okay. I think...
You think if Miami trades for him, they're going to the finals?
So here's my next question for you guys. We've talked about this Godfather, Justice, Jay Rich, Bam offer.
And the 2019 pick.
So the Heat do that trade, would you do that? Would you do that trade if you're the Heat?
Yes.
No.
I know they wouldn't. Yeah, you have.
Let's all go yes and no, and then we'll get into reasoning. So we got one yes from Yanni, one no from Harry. What about Brian and Leif?
Yes, absolutely.
Let me review this deal. So you're saying it's Bam, Jay Rich, Justice, and the pick for Kawhi?
Yes.
So you basically have emptied the entire treasure chest.
Emptied the treasure chest. What you've done is you've sent away every good piece you have, and you're left with Dion Waiters and Kawhi Leonard.
And Kelly Olynyk.
And James Johnson. Like,
okay, JJ. Okay.
Well, they're going to have to send Hassan to make contract work.
Maybe not. But you know what? Yes, I would do it because and quite frankly, it doesn't matter what any of us would do. Riley would absolutely do it because if you get that,
bring in a whale and figure it out from there.
Yeah, you get your one transcendent player, and a lot of people thought that was Wade during the Shaq years initially, but like that acquisition of Shaq was getting that transcendent, transformative player. He knew he had Wade coming up, but I don't think anyone necessarily knew that Wade was going to become the third greatest shooting guard of all time. Like that move was made
third?
With getting Alex Shaq third? And Kawhi. Yes, come on, man.
Third?
Yeah.
Yes.
Get out of my
third.
It's fitting. He's
behind Jordan and Kobe. Fired. Come on, man. And Wade is my favorite player ever.
Wade's better than Kobe.
Anyway, yeah, my point is, you get the transcendent superstar. You figure out the rest later. You shuffle those contracts around like deck chairs on the Titanic till you get the right mix of players. And eventually you have your picks again. And you sell them on the culture, baby.
Can't so a year ago, if you asked me, Rohan, if you asked me the same question 1 year ago, I would have told you, like just seeing Bam, like, you know what I mean? Like I would have done this move. The problem now is that I was expecting the Warriors to break this thing up. Like I was just looking at Steph Curry's new contract and Klay Thompson coming up and Draymond Green. And they gave Iggy a big deal. And I thought, okay, this Warriors run is, 2 to 3 years. And then they got to move Thompson, who's one of the best two-way players in the NBA. But, like, they've seen how good they are. They understand they're probably one of the greatest teams to ever be put together in sports. They're not going anywhere. So if you're the Heat, why don't you just build on what you have? You got some bad contracts for a few years. You can have two more years of six seeds, five seeds, and then you can go after guys who are available. Maybe you can spring for a big trade. Maybe you have more draft picks at your disposal in 2 years, and you can do that. If you empty the cupboard like that and you're building around Kawhi, Dion, Kelly, JJ, I mean, listen, that team's not winning anything. Like, yeah, listen, teams will you'll be more excited. Kawhi is one of the best players in the league. I get the allure of Kawhi. I just don't know if that's really the move. I don't usually preach patience. I'm not a patient person. I like results now. But from where we are and the landscape of the NBA and the fact that the Warriors, like unless Steph Curry suffers a serious ankle injury, they're not losing for a very long time.
So I have a question. If they traded for Kawhi and paid him, and then they took all their other contracts and they traded for John Wall, could John Wall and Kawhi Leonard playing 2-on-5 win more than 44 games like the James Johnson led Miami Heat did this past season.
Yeah. They'll get guys. I mean, but if you don't believe that, then you don't believe in Spoelstra. Cause like we've talked a lot on the show on like getting veterans on prove it deals and like how Spo's gonna make guys like get the most out of guys. And like, it's not that they're gonna sign like bums off the street. I'm not sure that they'll do the work and get, and they've been really good at using the D League. So I'm sure that they'll be able to get enough to probably get to 50 wins.
But if they truly believed in Spoelstra, we wouldn't really be in this position because they would have continued to bring in guys on prove-it deals. The fact that they went back and re-signed guys who had career years is a strange kind of deviation from the philosophy they were going with. It seemed like a good idea. Wade left. Let's bring in guys. Some hit, JJ. Some miss, Derek Williams. Hope he's enjoying China. But that's what I'm saying, and that's what, you know, Evan Cohen said a few pods ago. Like, you just have to keep bringing guys on prove it deals. The fact that we sign them to long term deals means that do they trust the process that they had, you know, come up with.
To Harry's point, the last 41 games of the, you know, the 41-41 season, the first 41 games of this season, the Heat were 52-30. So, I mean, there was a little something there. I mean, this season they kind of went off the rails a little bit. They were never a great team, for sure. But there was a little something there. It's so interesting that offseason I don't even think he's been that hiding it. I'm sure Riley regrets it on some level just because I feel like he doesn't get to play as much as he wants to play right now. He wants to be a player and all this stuff that's happening. And obviously it stopped him. But I never fully understood giving him the deals this long, because usually they give him deals with like, okay, 2019 is going to be a big year, we'll prepare for this year. I'm not surprised that they brought them back. I'm surprised how long they brought these guys for when there was this 1 year coming up that people have kind of been targeting.
You think part of it could have been that in the wake of how ugly it was with Wade leaving and then the Bosch situation, that Riley was almost overcompensating to a degree to try to be loyal to his guys and try to show the league, I take care of my own players, and you know, the stuff that you've heard about me recently is not true. Do you think that emotional factor played any part in it?
That's interesting. I mean, that would be pure speculation on my part. It's one of the better theories I've heard, right? I mean, not only that, but just to have the years they had after LeBron, I think to have some kind of stability was also probably appealing to them.
No.
I just called you Leaf. Leif, that has to be right, because I'll never understand the Deion contract knowing that, like, they knew he wasn't going to make it through the season. They gave him a 4-year deal when I've said this 1,000 times, but his ankle is tied together with bubble gum and popsicle sticks. Like, there's no reason that he should have gotten that deal. I mean, they should have said, listen, you were great for 40 games. That's cool. We could probably use another option down the stretch because everyone's afraid to shoot. You know, here's another 1-1, or here's a 2-year deal. The 4-year deal either lines it up where, yeah, Riley's trying to overcompensate, or they're just fine. They're okay. I know it sounds nothing like the Heat, nothing like Riley, but they saw the Warriors. They saw how ridiculous it was going to be. They saw that Anthony Davis and Giannis and those big time, like, guys that are some of the best athletes that have ever played in the NBA will likely be available. And you're better off kind of just waiting, letting your
2020, baby.
It's not anything you want to hear as a Heat fan and what you're used to since Riley took over in 95. I mean, he's always swung for the fences.
No, this is exactly what they've done. I mean, they did that as recently as 2008. They just waited.
Remember when all the fans were saying you're wasting Wade's prime years, surrounding him by Q Rich and surrounding him by Sean Marion and J.O.? Like, that was all set up.
Q Rich had his moments.
Yo, Q Rich is probably one of my 10 favorite Heat players ever.
Q Rich was a great. Here's a couple of things I want to. Let's actually hop back to 2008 for a minute. I want to throw a few things at you guys.
Right before you do that, I do need to do a promotion that we're doing, and I do want to get into Q Rich talk because I am here for that. Today we had a promotion on the Heat Beat account for at Ad Space Wolf. That's an ad company that's working with the Five Reasons Podcast Network and ourselves. And we ran a contest today to give a free ad to one of our listeners who nominated the best Heat Twitter bit / Heat Twitter moment, right? So we got a bunch of nominations. And the winner was probably obviously because it's been the most recent one and it's been really popular, the Marcus Camby GIF. So the Marcus Camby GIF was the winner, and our listener wanted to nominate a charity called Muscular Dystrophy. Brian, you spelled it phonetically.
Dystrophy.
Okay, muscular dystrophy is very difficult for me to read. Muscular dystrophy is a rare disease just found in 200,000 Americans that causes progressive weakness and loss of muscle mass. FSHD is an even rarer inherited form of the disease that attacks the face, back, and upper arm muscles in the body. Each year, 1 in 8,333 adults and children are affected by this disease with symptoms that include abdominal muscle weakness, joint and spinal injury, lower leg, lower hip, facial weakness, muscle pain and inflammation, and shortened lifespan. There is no known cure for this. However, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, MDA, has been helping individuals and their families to combat the muscle disease since the 1950s. With donations made, you can really help out. This disease has touched a lot of people. So please, we're going to put a link in the podcast description. We're going to tweet it out. We're going to really push that for the show because it's a really good cause. And it's actually really cool that a listener is promoting this. So please check that out. We'll include his ad and everything and the link. So that's our contest. A muscular dystrophy, please donate and help cure this awful disease. Okay.
Just so people know what the link is. To help the cause, it's MDA.org.
MDA.org. So check that out. And then insert a promo right here.
This week on the Five Reasons Podcast, we're joined by the one and only Stu Gatz. And so we're just going to do this rapid fire where I'm going to name a name and you're just going to go Elon Musk.
I've been on this for about a year now, and it's funny to see that everyone else is starting to catch up, okay? Because Elon Musk, he's a quack.
Kevin Durant.
Doesn't have any championships, period. End of discussion. I don't care how many he wins with Golden State. He will never have a championship in my personal record book.
All right, next one for you. Art Briles.
You can go to hell.
Okay. Sister Jean.
What bothers me about Sister Jean is the Stu Gatz are strong in Sister Jean. That's what... What I have learned over time is sometimes I look in the mirror and I don't like what's staring back at me.
Check out this podcast and our many others. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play. It's the Five Reasons Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Moving on to Q Rich Talk.
Well, I have a couple of things I want to throw out there. Number one, that Heat Celtics series in 2010. I think they maybe win one or two more games if Q Rich doesn't trash talk KG in the fourth quarter of game one. The Heat were right there with Boston. Q Rich goes at KG. Celtics end up winning that game. That was a tough one. Then Paul Pierce hits the game winner over Durant.
I was there, dude. I was so mad. And Wade was out for that last possession because he rolled his foot on Darrell Wright or something.
But Wade's game four in that series was my favorite game.
That's my favorite playoff game ever. Like, that's my favorite Wade playoff game ever.
He was getting triple teamed and just hitting launching threes from the top of the key. Didn't matter. Here's my question, and I know we got LeBron, and I know that I'm going to get laughed off for asking this.
Please say what I think you're going to say.
I think there's something to be said about how good Wade was those 2 years and the teams they put around him. And let me just say this. I don't know to the extent that the Heat ever thought Wade would have the knee issues that he did later in his career. They had to have had some inkling just because of what happened. That 07-08 year, he missed so much of it. You know, he came back that summer in amazing shape, had the two incredible years. But he was obviously very, 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 very good the first regular season with the Big Three. And then from there, he was still obviously a great player, but he never recaptured those 2 years. And sometimes I wonder what would have happened had they tried to compete with LeBron during that stretch as opposed to what happened, and what you guys think about that. Because part of me thinks LeBron in part turned into Super Saiyan. I'm not saying it wouldn't have happened. He's obviously a great player. In part was helped by Spo, you know, his evolution. But, you know, if you recall in 2009, and I'm sure Leif remembers this really well, they were very close to signing Lamar Odom to the full mid-level exception, which probably would have ruined, you know, whatever plans they had in 2010. So I'm just sometimes I do wonder, mostly as just a huge Dwayne Wade fan. Oh man, you know, I wish they had put championship teams around him in those 2 years because it could have been really interesting what happened.
Well, Rohan, I don't know if you remember that year the year that they play, the year that that Celtics series happened, Miami won the last game of the season. I believe it was against New Jersey when Yakobo Diawara banked in a three in overtime, which forced them to play the Celtics and not Atlanta, which I believe they had swept Atlanta that year in the regular season.
Had, so ironically, Atlanta had beaten them the year before.
In seven games. So something that I remember being really upset, and I always look back to that, and it said, had Diawara not hit that three and Miami plays Atlanta, I really feel confident to this day that they would have. I mean, now we know that Atlanta team to be the frauds that they were. Dwayne Wade was on a roll that year, and I don't have a doubt that they would have beaten them. And then the next round would have been against an Orlando Magic team that Miami, I think, had a 3-1 advantage in the regular season. And in particular, what Miami was doing a lot to Orlando was putting Dwight, despite Dwight being an elite pick and roll defender, they were really putting a lot of pressure with Dwayne as the ball handler in the pick and roll going at Dwight. And Dwight was out in a lot of those games because he was getting foul trouble because Dwayne was...
That Magic team was good, though.
But I do think Miami had a good matchup against them. And Miami played them... I think Orlando won one game against Miami, which was at home in overtime.
Still, I don't... Miami didn't want any smoke with that Orlando team. I'm sorry.
But that was not a bad matchup for them.
Another interesting angle of those Wade years between, the time when he was basically in his prime, but we were kind of setting up for the big three summer 2010, is that they tried to make deals. I mean, you alluded to the Lamar Odom thing, and that was one of like the few players that they were willing to dip into the cap space for, because I think that was maybe the year directly prior to 2010. But prior to that, they looked at Amare Stoudemire. They looked at Carlos Boozer. If I remember correctly, they may have looked at Turkoglu when he was available. Maybe even Rashard Lewis. I mean, I'm trying to jog my memory here. So it's not like they didn't explore putting guys around Wade. And the main one that comes to mind is Amare Stoudemire, because I know the trade deadline directly before that summer of 2010, they tried to get Amare, and he was also being coveted by the Cavs at the same time. And I often think about, in those years, had they made one of those signings that didn't compromise, or one of those trades that didn't compromise the signings of 2010, because all those guys were free agents lining up at the same time, like, how much better would those teams have been if you had Amare for a year next to that Wade, or even Carlos Boozer next to that Wade, you know, when Boozer was a 2010 guy? So the what ifs.
Well, Amare being the elite pick and roll player that he was, I mean, Dwayne was doing all his damage in the pick and roll, with his partner being Jermaine O'Neal, not Amare Stoudemire. So imagine.
Can I just say real quick, Jermaine had maybe one of the worst playoff series of all time.
He was good that year.
He was good that year. He could throw him in the post. He'd get you a bucket. You know, he was a decent little pick and roll guy. Yeah.
That turnaround was money.
The line drive turnaround. Yeah.
No, man, he was an abomination.
You know, he got hurt.
He was not an abomination.
Yes, he was.
He got,
just in the last series, he shot, what, 18%
or 18%? He got hurt, like, sometime in between, like, I think March and the end of the year, like, somewhere in between there. Because I know Dwayne missed, like, 10 games with a hamstring injury, which, by the way, that team probably wins, like, 48 games if Dwayne doesn't ruin his hamstring and miss, like, a month. Like, that happened. Like, Dwayne missed a month, and they were, like, relying on Michael Beasley at the end of games. Michael Beasley
before,
and J.O.
Before that season started, I saw Jermaine O'Neal in the airport in Vegas, and went up to him and said, "What's up?" And I told him I was a Heat fan, and he said, "We're going to be right this year. We're going to be right this year." Like, he basically just repeated that over and over again and walked away. And by that last playoff series, we wasn't all right, man.
Damn, yo.
I thought Jamario Moon was going to be a steal, man. I liked him.
I love how Jermaine O'Neal actually had to ask permission to wear a headband. Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
That was a no. Like, yeah, they didn't allow them forever. LeBron was like when the floodgates really opened there.
Yeah. No doubt.
Nathan, what were you going to say? I'm sorry I cut you off with my headband tidbit.
Oh, I'm one of those idiots that also thought Marcus Banks was going to be a really good player when the Heat got. I thought he was going to fit next to Wade. They were going to be running and gunning. That didn't work out.
Marcus Banks played like 4 minutes. Like, yeah. I was like, he's gonna be good, and then I never saw him play a game for the Miami Heat.
One of my most hated Heat players is Daquan Cook. To this day,
I never liked him. He became good. He would have been great if he came up today. He could play a little defense too.
I wish I had kept Q Rich. Like for the LeBron
I wish they
years.
Kept Jason Capono.
Oh, Capono. No, nah, dude, Q Ritz, dude.
Huge deal.
Q Ritz was about that life. Imagine Q Ritz in the big 3 years. Like, imagine Q Ritz scrapping, going to war with those guys. That guy
do
was
you guys cool. remember? Do you guys remember Spo drawing up a game-winning shot for Capono in Indy once? They were like down two, and he drew up a Capono three for the win.
Yes,
that was wild. That was like, I was like, oh, it's like that, huh?
Do you
Capono
guys
had money for a year.
He was a white lane.
He was like 50% from three for an entire season.
He was crazy. He was ahead
you
of
guys
the time.
You guys just named all our 3-point champions right there.
James Jones, Capono,
Hall of Famer.
Glenn Rice won it too.
James
it was amazing. We'd go to the All-Star break, we'd win, and then those guys would never hit a three again. It was masterful how that happened. Yeah, I can't believe it.
I wish they'd bring back the Shooting Stars competition just
me
so we
too.
Could get a boss.
Boss owned
well, just, let me take you back. Let me take you back to being a really old Heat fan. There was a day as a Heat fan where at All-Star weekend, Glenn Rice won the 3-point shootout, Harold Miner won the dunk contest, and to date, that was the most successful achievements in franchise history. And like literally we were watching that on All-Star weekend and we were like cheering as if we made it.
That's awesome.
And now we're complaining about tanking.
Take that for data.